yahoo.net.
I got a microphone. I'm not afraid to use it. You heard of that hit program? Everybody Loves Raymond? Well, this is Catholic Radio's counterpart to that. Some people sort of tolerate Raymond. Good morning, Wes. Good afternoon, East. Doctor is in, 877-573-7825. All right, let's go straight to this because I want to get it in. It's all the intro you're going to get. Don't normally read stuff on this program, but this is an all-time classic. People wondering who that is. Muhammad Ali. A classic for all time. By Dave Barry, a funny, funny columnist. What women don't understand about guys. Contrary to what many women believe, it's easy to develop a long-term, intimate, and mutually fulfilling relationship with a guy. Of course, the guy has to be a Labrador Retriever. With human guys, it's extremely difficult. This is because guys don't really grasp what women mean by the word relationship. Let's say a guy named Roger asks a woman named Elaine out to a movie. She accepts. They have a good time. A few nights later, he asks her out to dinner. Again, they enjoy themselves. They continue to see each other regularly, and soon neither is seeing anybody else. One evening, they're driving home. A thought occurs to Elaine. Do you realize that we've been seeing each other for exactly 6 months? Silence fills the car. To Elaine, it seems like a very loud silence. She thinks to herself, gee, I wonder if it bothers him that I said that. Maybe he feels confined by our relationship. Maybe he thinks I'm trying to push him into some kind of obligation. Roger is thinking, gosh, 6 months. Elaine is thinking, but hey, I'm not so sure I want this kind of relationship either. Are we heading toward marriage, towards children, toward a lifetime together? Am I ready for that level of commitment? Do I really even know this person? Roger is thinking, so that means it was, let's see, February when we started going out, which was right after I had the car at the dealer's, which means, let me check the odometer here. Whoa, I'm way overdue for an oil change here. Elaine is thinking, he's upset. I can see it on his face. Maybe I'm reading this completely wrong. Maybe he wants more from our relationship, more intimacy, more commitment. Maybe he senses my reservations. Yes, that's it. He's afraid of being rejected. Roger is thinking, I'm going to have him look at this transmission again. I don't care what those morons say. It's still not shifting right. And they better not try to blame it on cold weather this time. It's 87 degrees out, and this thing is shifting like a garbage truck. I paid those incompetent thieving cretins $600. Elaine is thinking, he's angry, look at that, and I don't blame him. I'd be angry too. I feel so guilty putting him through this, but I can't help the way I feel, I'm just not sure. And Roger is thinking, they'll probably say it's only a 90-day warranty, that's what they'll say. Elaine is thinking, maybe I'm too idealistic, waiting for a knight to come riding up on a white horse, when I'm sitting next to a perfectly good person who's in pain because of my self-centered schoolgirl fantasy. Roger is thinking, warranty? I'll give them a warranty. Roger, Elaine says out loud. What? Says Roger. I'm such a fool, Elaine says, sobbing. I mean, there's no knight, and there's no horse. There's no horse? Says Roger. You think I'm a fool, don't you? Elaine says. No, Roger says. Glad to know he got the correct answer. It's just that I need some time, Elaine says. There is a 15-second pause while Roger tries to come up with a safe response. Yes, he finally says. Elaine, deeply moved, touches his hand. Oh, Roger, do you really feel that way? What way? Says Roger. That way about time? Elaine says. Oh, yes? Elaine gazes deeply into his eyes, causing him to become very nervous about what she might say next. At last she says, thank you, Roger. Thank you, he says. Then he takes her home, and she lies on her bed, a conflicted soul, weeping until dawn. Whereas, when Roger gets back to his place, he opens up a bag of chips, turns on the TV, and immediately becomes deeply involved in a rerun of a tennis match between two Czech players he never heard of. A tiny voice in his mind tells him that something major was going on back there in the car, but he figures it's better not to think about it. The next day, Elaine will call her closest friend, and they will talk for 6 straight hours. In painstaking detail, they will analyze everything she said and everything he said. They will continue to discuss this subject for weeks, never reaching any definite conclusions, but never getting bored with it either. Roger, meanwhile, playing racquetball one day with a friend of his and Elaine's, will pause just before serving and ask, "Norm, did Elaine ever own a horse?" We're not talking about different wavelengths here. We're talking about different planets in completely different solar systems. Elaine cannot communicate meaningfully with Roger because the sum total of his thinking about relationships is, huh? He has a guy brain, basically an analytical problem-solving organ. It's not comfortable with nebulous concepts such as love, need, and trust. If the guy brain has to form an opinion about another person, it prefers to base it on facts, such as his earned run average. Women have trouble accepting this. They are convinced that guys must spend a certain amount of time thinking about the relationship. How could a guy see another human being day after day, night after night, and not be thinking about the relationship? This is what women figure, anyway. They are wrong. A guy in a relationship is like an ant standing on top of a truck tire. The ant is aware that something large is there, but he cannot even dimly comprehend what it is. And if the truck starts moving and the tire starts to roll, the ant will sense that something is happening. But right up until he rolls around to the bottom and is squashed, the only thought in his tiny brain will be, huh? Thus, ladies, the number one tip to remember, never assume the guy understands that you and he have a relationship. You have to plant the idea in his brain by constantly making subtle references to it, such as, "Roger, would you mind passing me the sugar? Inasmuch as we have a relationship. Wake up, Roger. There's a prowler in the den, and we have a relationship. You and I do. I mean, good news, Roger. The doctor says we're going to have our fourth child. Another indication that we have a relationship. Roger, inasmuch as this plane is crashing and we only have a minute to live, I want you to know that we've had a wonderful 53 years of marriage together, which clearly constitutes a relationship." Women, never let up. Pound away relentlessly at this concept, and eventually it will start to penetrate his brain. Someday, he might even start thinking about it on his own. He'll be talking with some other guys about women, and out of the blue he'll say, "Elaine and I, we have this thing." And he will sincerely mean it. Dr. A. I'll be right back.
Then are you concerned about these difficult financial times? A popular culture that preaches immorality, your family's present and future well-being. It can be altogether overwhelming, but there is an answer. Prayer is the answer. Christ is the answer. You're invited to join the men of the Upper Room for a Christ Our Hope prayer hour. We're meeting every first Friday. Stand together with other concerned men from all over the Detroit and Ann Arbor area in prayer, scripture, and song. Our next gathering is Friday, July 3rd. We're meeting at the Lower Chapel in the St. John Center and at other locations around the metro area. For a complete list and help in starting a friend's prayer location, go to ChristChosen.com. Seek the source of our hope and stand against the culture of death. The men will pray from 6 to 7 a.m. so you can still get to work on time. Pray for our country. Pray for the culture and finances. Pray for each other. Pray at a Christ Our Hope Prayer Hour. Christ Our Hope Prayer Hours for Men is coordinated by the Office of Evangelism of the Archdiocese of Detroit. For more information, go to ChristChosen.com.
And now a word of encouragement from Mark Shea at CatholicExchange.com.
The image of God is not fully expressed in Adam alone, but in Adam and Eve together. Indeed, Scripture tells us, after a relentlessly upbeat account of creation, which is repeatedly punctuated by the exclamation, "God saw that it was good, God saw that it was good, God saw that it was very good," that there was one thing God saw that was not good. A human being all alone. So God gives Adam to Eve, and Eve to Adam, just as the Father gives himself completely to the Son, and the Son gives himself completely to the Father. Moreover, just as Adam and Eve together bear fruit, in a new human life, so from the eternal love of Father and Son proceeds the person of the Holy Spirit. In a mysterious way, Genesis and the mystery of human love foreshadow something of the ultimate reality behind the world, the love of the Blessed Trinity. Today, thank God for the family, whether natural or spiritual, that God has given you in His love as a school for heaven. I'm Mark Shea for CatholicExchange.com.
Bless you.
I'll see you later.
Thank you so much for everything you do and for the humor and the joyfulness that you bring. I love to just chuckle and listen to you.
Another line pirated from Al Kresta's program.
Yeah, I want to thank Andrew Krucek. What he does is he listens to hours of programming from Ave Maria Radio, and he goes through and pirates them. You know, Al gets compliments, Teresa gets compliments, Popchecks get compliments. So he goes through, and he takes it, puts it on my program. Al got upset. And I said, hey, Al, I'm not stopping you from doing it with mine. He said, Ray, I would do it with yours. We're still waiting for one. I said, yeah, well, my mother called. He goes, yeah, nothing we could use. 877-573-7825. Doctor is in. I'm the doctor who is in. I'm Ray Guarendi. You can be in if you call that number. Questions about the stuff of life. All right. Let's go to the phone line, see what's going on out there in the hinterlands. Paul from Michigan. Hi, Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hello?
Hey, you're on.
Hey. It's Carl, not Paul.
Oh, well, all right. Well, Andrew says he heard Paul, but never mind. Well, then you can't talk then. And you're probably not from Michigan. And my name's Roy. And this is not about a kid. This is about an elderly parent.
No, this is about a kid.
Okay, I'm with you.
What's up? Have a kid in our neighborhood. It's a rural neighborhood. He's been diagnosed, according to his parents, with a couple four-letter designations, some Asperger's, and we're not quite buying into it. We're thinking more along the line he's just an undisciplined teenager.
Okay.
We've got 10 kids of our own, 8 of them boys, and he influences our boys in a pretty negative fashion, and we're not for sure how to deal with this teenager other than just isolate him from our family.
It's not relevant, really, to you whether he's diagnosed or not. Because
Right. Whether
he is or whether he isn't, what he's doing, you've decided is not good for your kids, correct?
Right.
What has slowed you or stopped you up to this point from putting limits on this kid's contact with yours?
Well, he has a hard time being honest. He's very deceptive, very manipulative. He gets into mischief, it seems, wherever he goes. And we've seen that rubbing off on our boys. So we put a limit to how much time he spent with them. But now it's getting worse and worse, and we're pretty much to the point of just stay away.
Do you see any problem with that?
Well, it doesn't seem to be the very Christian thing to do, really.
Whoa. See, that was the answer to my question when I said, what has stopped you? If you think that somehow, some way, you've got to welcome this kid, I can understand your wanting to show him Christian love and acceptance. The problem is, I don't think our Lord would ask us to sacrifice the moral, emotional well-being of our kids. Kids now, okay? It would be different if you invited him to your house and there were no kids to influence, and you certainly wouldn't be influenced by all of his conduct. But your kids are being. They're not capable, or they're less capable of not being influenced by him than you are. So, on one hand, yeah, you could make a case that the Christian thing to do would be to welcome this boy, but on the other hand, you have to ask, what's the cost? And the cost here is the rubbing off of worldliness and maybe lack of moral norms onto your kids. See, if it were me, we had this problem years ago in our neighborhood. We had a couple boys who were being very poorly raised. And one of the rules we had is the only contact you can have with these kids is at our house and under very close supervision. And if there's any kind of cussing, any kind of misconduct, the contact's over. Ultimately, the kids stopped coming over because our rules were too narrow for their liking.
Well, that's kind of where we're at now. We don't leave him unsupervised with our children.
Okay.
So we control what he does, what he says, and everything. But now they're doing an internship at a museum together, and now one of my boys is there with him during the day.
Does your boy have to be there? So. Does your boy have to be at that internship?
No.
If it's a volunteer thing, I might think about whether I let him go.
Well, we've thought about that, too.
Yep. Sadly, Carl, here's the deal. With more children being raised very poorly and the culture shaping who they are, if a parent is really trying to raise a good, moral kid, the gap between the way those kids are being raised and the way your kids are being raised is getting larger and larger and larger. And unfortunately, there seem to be more and more of those kids. And as a result, a parent has to limit certain social contacts much more so than they would want to. But you have to. You got no choice. You got no choice. So if you're asking me, this has absolutely zero to do with your Christian obligation. It has everything to do with protecting your kids as they grow up. Okay.
Is there anything we can do to help this parent discipline their child, or is that something we should just stay out of?
You stay out of it unless they ask you, or unless the topic comes up in some kind of conversation. One thing you could do for the kid, you could invite him with you when you go somewhere. If you go out to eat, you get ice cream, you take an activity, he can go with you so that he's never farther than 10 feet away from your ear. And you might be able to make him feel more welcome and warm there as he sees how a family lives that is a loving, good family. That would be okay. But again, it would be under your conditions, not his. I think one of the things you're going to run into as he gets older, he's probably going to get a little more worldly, maybe get into some trouble. And as a result, the natural contact between him and your boys is going to simply fade away. Okay, my friend?
Okay, thank you.
Good luck to you. I know you feel bad doing it. Nobody likes to do it. Nobody likes to look at another kid, especially a kid that we look at and say, doggone it, it's not his fault. He's not being raised well. It's a bad situation. You know, we've got to somehow find a way to show this kid Christian love and another way of living. You can do that, but generally not in the context of having your kids hang with him. You can do it. Maybe he comes to supper at your house, or you say, hey, John, you want to stay and eat with us tonight? Kind of thing. And he sees you say blessings, and he sees what your dinner table is like. Okay, and he sees how you and your spouse act with each other. You can do that. But the more unsupervised, unstructured situation of your kids going out and playing with him throughout the neighborhood or over at his house, that's something I'm real reluctant to do. I've seen too many burns on that one. Laura, Sacramento, California. Hi, Laura. You're on the air, Laura. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
All right, and yourself?
I'm doing good here. Thanks for the call.
Yes, I just wanted to know, how can I assist my husband in the economic situation that we're in? Today I accidentally washed a check that he had in an envelope, really folded up in the smallest pocket of his jeans, and I had no idea. I always search his pockets just to make sure I don't ruin anything. But in the end, it ended up being, you know, I guess my fault for, you know, destroying the check, and I have to go back over to the person that paid him to redo a check, and he was just like cussing big time, and I'm thinking, well, if you would have put it in your wallet, something that, you know.
He was mad at you because you washed his clothes and got the check wet?
Yeah, well, destroyed basically, and because I didn't check all his pockets, I didn't check the smallest pocket that's on jeans. I just checked off all their four pockets. And I'm thinking, cause we had the discussion the other day. I said, when you go out and cash checks and you, like, keep it a secret and don't say, you know, what you've paid or what, you know, needs to be paid, and we need the money. And so now I'm seeing, like, things are turning more against him for having that secrecy of, you know, having that money and not telling me, knowing that, you know, we need the money.
What does he do with that money?
He pays other people that, you know, that that do work for him.
Are you saying he deliberately doesn't tell you about certain amounts of that money because he figures he's going to do with it what he wishes as he thinks is best? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and then I'm supposed to scrounge up, you know, with the rest of the money that does come in, you know, to pay the bills and go from there. And so I've been telling him, I said, this can't go on, you know, you keeping secrets like that. So the check was so nicely folded in the smallest pocket of his jeans that I didn't even think to check. You know, there's nothing in the pocket, so I'm good to go.
Well, I would speculate a couple things.
Uh-huh.
One, the fact that it was so nicely folded in the smallest pocket may mean that he wasn't real anxious for you to find it. And two, that he got that mad, that upset, when you accidentally washed that check may mean, and again, I can't know this for sure, I'm just throwing out ideas, it may mean that he had no intentions for you to find that check.
Yeah.
And you did.
And I did, and
now you got the hassle of you in his mind nagging him once again to tell you when money comes in. Does this?
It's not like a nag, because it's, you know, it's same debt that he's created. So it's just, you know, and I've tried to stop him, and you know, we're living the consequences of all him not listening.
You having a tough time paying your bills?
Yeah, and you know, for the same reason that he does other, you know, other payments, that other debts that he has too, and.
So it sounds like it isn't just hide money from you. It sounds like he handles money very irresponsibly.
Yeah.
He would never be willing to allow you to take over the money and the bills, would he?
Well, no. I handle taking care of all the bills. But I'm saying is, like, not all the money is coming in that supposedly is supposed to be coming in.
You might have to. You might. How long have you been married?
We've been married 12 years.
12 years. Been this way for 12 years?
No, this really started happening last year when all this started.
Well, I guess I would wonder what kind of debts he has to pay that he doesn't want you to know about. That is something that would be a big question mark for me.
Uh-huh.
That's what you got to get to the bottom to. And I would suggest there are some financial ministries around, some Christian financial ministries. Phil Lenihan has a Catholic financial ministry. Money Sense, I believe, is the his name of his little program. But then he also has principles based upon Catholic notions on managing money and budgets and all of that. However, it seems like the underlying struggle here is that your husband, for whatever the reason, has some things he wants to do with that money he doesn't want you to know about. And that's, I think, what you got to check into for sure. This is Dr. A, 877-573-7825, 877-5-PEP-TALK. That's the number. Call. Get on the program. When the music stops, I take a nap. Then I wake up. Time we come back.
This is Life News Radio. I'm Jim Anderson. It's another new undercover video done at a Planned Parenthood. Again telling how many in the abortion industry handle possible cases of sexual abuse. This new footage shows a staffer at a Birmingham, Alabama abortion center telling a woman who appears to be a victim of statutory rape that we bend the rules. The video also shows the Planned Parenthood staff telling the woman how she should illegally evade parental consent laws. A House committee will likely vote next week on whether to spend taxpayer funds to pay for abortions in the nation's capital through various means. When it votes, the nation's Catholic bishops have asked the House to support keeping the Dornan Amendment in place, hoping to fulfill the wish of pro-abortion groups President Obama requested that Congress overturn that long-standing ban. This is Life News Radio. The oldest organization offering help for women with emergency pregnancies was started in Toronto in 1968 and has hundreds of offices now in the U.S. and around the world. Birthright is ready for your call 24/7. When you know someone who needs support or if you're ready to help, call the Birthright hotline, 800-550-4900. 800-550-4900. A new Rasmussen poll not only shows pro-abortion President Barack Obama's approval rating at the lowest of any point during his presidency, but among voters with the most intense support or opposition of his tenure, it has Obama with a net negative for the very first time. For pro-life headlines you can read in less than a minute each day delivered to your email address, sign up at lifenews.com. This has been Life News Radio.
One of the things I like about my wife, she's kind of old-fashioned, you know. I said, honey, I said, why don't you take care of some of this communication with your friends and other folks via email? It's quicker. You can just type out a little message, a sentence or two. She said, no, Ray. I'm an old-fashioned girl. I prefer calling and hanging up. This is Dr. Ray here. Before we get to your calls, I do want to share with you. This is a story I shared with you about several months ago. And I hate to say it because it kind of puts me down, but all part of my deep humility competition. I was asked to write an advice column. And in writing these advice columns, of course, you have to submit a prototype, something that answers a question. They send you the question, and then you answer it. Well, here's the question they sent me. Dear Dr. Ray, I hope you can help me here. The other day, I set off for work in my Volvo 1800, leaving my husband in the house watching the TV as usual. I hadn't gone more than a mile down the road when my engine conked out. The car shuddered to a halt. I walked back home to get my husband's help. When I got home, I couldn't believe my eyes. He was having coffee with the neighbor lady. I am 32. My husband is 34. We have been married for 12 years. When I confronted him, he broke down and admitted that he had feelings for her. I told him to stop or I would leave. He was let go from his job 6 months ago. He says he has been feeling increasingly depressed and worthless. I love him very much. But ever since I spoke to him about this, he has become increasingly distant. He won't go to counseling, and I'm afraid I can't get through to him anymore. Can you please help? Sure, this is what I wrote. Dear Sheila, a Volvo 1800 stalling after being driven a short distance can be caused by a variety of faults with the engine. Start by checking that there is no debris in the fuel line. If it's clear, check the vacuum lines and the hoses on the intake manifold, and also check all grounding wires. If none of these approaches solves the problem, it could be that the fuel pump itself is faulty, causing low delivery pressure to the carburetor float chamber. I hope this helps. Dr. A. Now, I have not heard back from these folks, and I'm wondering what it is. Because I think they're a little biased. I checked my grammar. My grammar was fine. My sentence structure was fine. I thought it was short, snappy, to the point. I covered a wide range of potential reasons for the problem. I don't know. Still waiting to hear. Haven't heard. Maria from Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Maria.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you, dear. Do we have an affiliate down here in Birmingham?
Yes, we do. Got the name. It's, I'm sorry, I forgot the name.
Wait a minute, hold on, I'll help you out.
yeah.
This is how much we mean to you. If you call in here and I say, where are you listening from? Well, it's this radio station.
Well, no, but then right now I'm listening through the internet because I don't have a radio in my office. So that's my alibi.
Oh, so you're ripping off your employer.
Queen of Almost there.
All right, I'm gonna let it slide this time.
Sorry.
I'll try it again.
Yes, next time I'll remember.
Thank you, dear. How about this brother of yours? What's he doing?
Yes, he got divorced about 2 years ago. It's his wife. I still call him her wife because they've not had any annulment yet. Who was the one who wanted out of the marriage? And my brother tried everything. But then, you know, the wife is now married to another person.
Mm-hmm.
Now my brother has been dating, and the person he's dating wants to get married, but clearly not in the Catholic Church, because the girl wanted to have a child and, you know, just get married. It's the clock is just ticking.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what to do, and what I'm thinking about is I shouldn't be supporting this marriage. That's what I wanted to do, to tell him that this is not right and that I won't be able to accept the lady to be part of the family until they get married in the church. I don't know if that's the right thing to say. I think it is. I don't know how to say it. I just don't know what to do.
What has he done with his Catholic faith? Has he abandoned it totally?
No, he has been going to church, and I've been reminding him that if he's doing something that he's not supposed to be doing, that he should not be going to, which I think he is, that he should not be going to communion.
So he's kind of...
But
he's setting the terms of his Catholic faith.
He's deciding
I can be Catholic on my terms, and I don't have to follow some of these morals I don't agree with.
Correct. And every time I talked to him about it, he would just kind of laugh and brush me off, and you know, and that's it. And yeah.
Sadly, Maria, I read a quote once in First Things where a Protestant minister said something to the effect, "You guys better not change your rules on marriage and divorce, because if you do, we're going to lose a lot of converts."
Yeah.
Sadly, this happens so frequently. People say, I'm a good Catholic. I go to church. I don't steal. I don't punch people in the face. I don't lie too much. And but when they start getting into this marriage thing, well, now that's where me and the church part ways, because I think the church doesn't know what she's talking about. Who does she think she is to tell me who I can date, who I can't date, who I can divorce, who I can't divorce, how I can get remarried, where I can get remarried? Come on. It's probably where your brother is.
Yeah.
And he knows where you are, by the way, because you've told him. Mm-hmm. So the first question is, what do I say to my brother? Probably not much. Although I personally would be curious, I'd say to him, well, I'm just curious, are you basically leaving the faith? I'd ask him that. No, I'm not leaving. Well, then how do you view this? How do you justify this? What is your thinking on this that you can go against the very basic moral of the church, which is you're married? And you're wanting to get remarried, and not only that, but you're getting remarried elsewhere. I mean, I just want to know. Don't argue with him. Just get him to say his thinking out loud so you know where he is with all this. That's first thing. Second thing, I think you're on much more solid ground to say, I can't support this marriage. Because first of all, in the eyes of the church, you're still married. I'd say in the eyes of God. Because a lot of times when you say the eyes of the church, people will immediately say, well, who's the church? I answer
right.
to God.
Right.
So you might say, in the eyes of God and the church, you're still married. Now, if he says, well, you know, that's your thinking, Maria. That's how you think. I might say, well, no, that used to be the way you thought prior to the divorce. And if he says, well, I didn't want the divorce. I don't see why I have to suffer, live alone for the next 60 years or whatever it is, simply because she left me. I did everything in my power. And I would acknowledge that. I said, yes, you did, and I admired you so much for that. But now the situation is a bit different because there are things that you can look into, and you don't want to for whatever the reason. Now, I would also say to him, are you planning on leaving the Catholic Church. If you get remarried elsewhere, is that your way of saying, I no longer am Catholic? Or are you just getting remarried elsewhere so you and your new person can go to the Catholic Church as man and wife in appearance? Okay, I'd want to know these things. In terms of going to the marriage, I think you're on very solid ground to say, you know what, I can't witness this. This goes against everything I believe in. You are going against everything you once believed in. So I can't in good conscience attend this. Now, what do you do with her after this quasi-marriage?
Right.
At that point, I think you're on shakier ground to have no relationship with her. Obviously, your brother will be very clear how you think, but you're attempting to essentially say, okay, I'm not going to shun you. I'm not going to shun your girlfriend. As far as I'm concerned, I've told you, and you don't agree, so now the matter is between you and God. Because I got to believe that there are a ton of folks listening to this in my vast listening audience of 46 people that have relatives and friends who have divorced, remarried outside the church, or are dating someone outside the church, and they know how we feel, but you can't shut them off. You can't just can't say, I'm going to have no relationship with you.
Right.
Because otherwise, pretty soon, we'd start cutting out a lot of people in our lives. So there's a difference between not morally approving and agreeing with something and shutting the person out.
So having still a relationship I with them, with both my brother and the other person, is not tolerating it. It's not saying that I agree with what...
No, you're not. Oh, my gosh. Maria, if I had to cut off contact with folks to more or less convey the message that I don't morally agree with what you're doing, my social circle, maybe my family circle, would be a lot smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Sure. So.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, sure. I remember the affiliate, Queen of Heaven Radio.
Yeah, okay.
I just want to make sure that's, yeah. Wow. So if you're in Birmingham, listen to Queen of Heaven Radio.
Well, then I got a confession to make.
Yes.
If you can stay on the line a couple more minutes, I'm going to change all my advice because I gave you completely wrong advice just to be nasty because you didn't remember the name of the station and I wasn't going to give you good advice.
Okay.
Thanks, honey. I'll talk to you.
Well, thank you.
Bye. Hey, isn't that the great question? Isn't that the great moral question? We all struggle with this. What do you do with somebody who flagrantly contravenes a big moral teaching of the church and essentially is in your family, your close circle of friends, your work colleagues? What do you do? Well, at some level, the close people to you know where you're at. They know how you stand. They'll make comments. Maybe the work colleagues aren't quite sure where you stand, but in some respects, there's nothing you're going to do about it because they're going to live it the way they want to live it, and it's between them and God. And I often wrestled with, we pick certain marital sins to struggle with in terms of whether we should have contact with these people. But if you get down to the nitty-gritty, what about big sins that, for example, he hates his brother's guts and he hasn't talked to his brother for 9 years? Do you say, well, you know, what you're doing is totally wrong. It's a grievous sin in the eyes of the church that you proclaim you belong to, and I really can't associate with you until you start talking to your brother again. See, so there's a certain selectivity in us even. All right. Or, for example, what about the person who continues to take communion when you know that they've done things, and they know they've done things, they shouldn't take communion, but they do. Are you going to say, until you stop taking communion, I'm not going to have any relationship with you, I'm not going to talk to you, I'm not going to socialize with you, if we go to Christmas Eve and you're there, I'm not gone? It raises some very interesting questions. Hey, how do I know that some of you people calling in here aren't in a state of enmity with God. Maybe I shouldn't talk to you. Yeah, maybe we should have you fill out a little form for Andrew. Andrew, you ask him some key theological, moral, doctrinal questions. Have him fill it out. They got to get above 60. 60 is passing. They get above 60, we'll talk to them. They don't, put them on the pagan line. It's Dr. Ray. I'll be right back.
The doctor is in. Now, don't you feel better?
And now a word of encouragement from Mark Shea at CatholicExchange.com.
It is a curious thing that God has ordained His Holy Spirit be given in fuller measure in confirmation. Yet it is a thing which corresponds remarkably well to all that we actually experience as human beings. Just as we do not feed babies beef and beer, so we do not expect from children prodigies of courage, strength, or understanding. Indeed, they are often deeply fearful and timid, but they and we often carry that sense of powerlessness right into adulthood when God calls us to take our place in the kingdom and boldly approach Him and the world. So God lays His hands on us like a father, reassuring His children and reminds us who we are in Christ, sons and daughters of God. Moreover, He not only reminds us who we are, He gives us new strength, gifts, and maturity in confirmation so that we can literally do what we cannot on our own possibly do. Don't forget to thank God today for the gifts He has given you in confirmation. I'm Mark Shea for CatholicExchange.com.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
It's Catholicism 101 on Christ is the Answer this week. As many in our listening audience are or are preparing to head back to school, we're revisiting a series of Catholicism 101 classes Father Ricardo taught over the summer of 2005. The subject this week is the Eucharist. Listen Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet. Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the answer.
Greg Rendy here on The Doctor is In, good Lord permitting. Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern, and all the time zones scattered around the globe, you know. With modern broadcasting, this stuff, what we say, heads out towards the satellite. And you got to figure some of the words miss the satellite and keep going on out into outer space at 186,000 miles a second, which is approximately the speed of radio waves. So some of my words right now are millions and billions of miles away, having no impact on anybody. And I don't think that's any big deal, because that happens in my house. When I say words to my children from 10 feet away, and they have no impact on anybody. Same thing. Outer space, vacuum, children, pretty much discipline the same. AveMariaRadio.net, website for Ave Maria Radio, who produces this program. EWTN.com, Global Catholic Radio. You can listen to all those places, as well as Immaculate Heart Radio, Covenant Radio Network, Family Radio Network, there's just all kinds of Guadalupe Radio, Station of the Cross in Buffalo, all kinds of neato Kino people who are kind enough to carry this program. My listening audience has quadrupled since I started doing this program. Yeah, fastest growing listening audience. When I started the program, we had 14 people listening. Quadrupled, we're up to 56. Huh, explosive growth. My website, drray.com, drray.com. Let's go to Karen from New Mexico. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Dr. Ray, how are you?
I'm fine. How is it out there? Nice and warm?
You know, it's not bad. It's about 90. But there's no humidity.
I was just getting ready to say, that's what people out west always say. They always say, yeah, you know, it's 112, but no humidity. And I always say, yeah, my oven has no humidity either.
Yeah, but I wouldn't recommend you jump into it.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, so before the break, that was a beautiful segue into my question.
I know. Hey, I'm glad you noticed it because I am a professional.
You did that on purpose, I bet.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have a very dear, dear family friend who is gay. He is a surrogate grandfather to my kids, really. He comes over and he watches the kids when I'll go run to the grocery store or whatever, and he just loves them to death. He had a partner who died, and that's kind of when we became more involved with him. And actually, the subject of how he lives his life has never come up in my house or with my children. He has never come over to my house with anyone. He's always been alone. And until recently, he has a friend that visits him from out of state. And he was going to come over to watch the kids, and he came with this friend. And I completely agree with you as far as I don't want to shut him out. I just don't know what the parameters are as far as, you know, do you have these people over for dinner? Do you...
The parameters are what you set. If you say,
what?
First of all, you obviously are very at ease with this gentleman watching your children, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, how old is he?
He is about 68.
Okay. My first question that occurs to me is, if up to this point he appears to have respected your wishes, which are don't confuse the children, let's not have them raise questions that at their age I have to explain. It sounds like he tacitly has respected that. So my
even though we've never spoken about it.
Well, he must be socially savvy enough to look at you and your family and recognize that you are of traditional religious values, and therefore this would not be something you would say is equally moral to a man and a woman married. He must know that. Okay.
I've always assumed that, yes.
Yeah. So now the question is, what happened to make him this time bring over a friend? If he says, well, he was in town, I saw no problem with it, the kids won't understand it, they just figure it's a buddy, no big deal.
Right.
Okay. If that's his response, you could say, well, I understand that, but again, I think for my kids it might raise questions that at this point I don't want to have to answer. It sounds like he should respect that, given that he's respected it up to this point.
Right.
If not, then I'd want to know why he's become a little more assertive about setting the boundaries, if you will,
mm-hmm.
regarding this. If up to this point he's kept a low profile because the kids were concerned and he knew that this was something that you're very protective of, he was fine with that. Has anything changed? Was this just a one-time thing that just sort of happened because of practicalities and he figured it's no big deal and he's not going to make a practice of it?
I hope.
Okay, well, yeah, that's what you got to find out.
Well, so, and then this is really my general question. As a Christian Catholic, what is, you know, what is my message? How do I live my life in a charitable way and deliver yet the message of what my beliefs are?
I'm not sure you have to specifically deliver the message of your beliefs, because if he's any kind of aware person, he knows that if you're a faithful practicing Catholic and he sees it in many, many ways, then he knows where you stand regarding morality.
Right. I'm not talking about him necessarily. I'm talking in a general sense.
Okay.
We have, like, for example, you. Would you have a gay couple to your house for dinner? Does that convey the message that you think that's okay?
It depends, I think, on who the gay couple is, and it depends upon whether they would respect, for example, my conditions, my terms, my children, and my morality. I have a lot of friends who are homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
They're not deep friends, but they are people I know through the sports world. I remember when I was much younger, I was staying at the house. I would work out of town. And two nights a week, I would work till 9 o'clock. And it made no sense to drive an hour or something back home. So I stayed with a friend. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought nothing of it. Until probably a year or two later, I found out he was homosexual. I didn't move out at that time. I didn't know. I didn't think anything of it. All right? He was a guy that was very pleasant. We had a very nice social relationship. In any way, shape, or form, he did not push anything upon me. He did not ask me to celebrate and accept. It was just whom he was. Okay? But he kept it very low profile. This was, I got that time, I don't know where I was with my own church morality. I was younger. I'm not sure I'd handle it that way now. However, yes, I do have acquaintances, people within my broader social circle who are homosexual. And for me, the topic just doesn't come up. It is something that they've chosen to live, and I, even though morally, obviously, I have grave reservations about it, I'm not going to shut them out. So if you say, would you have more for dinner? Well, only you would know the message that would convey regarding celebrating that relationship, regarding what it would mean. That's up to you. Okay,
and but it's that simple.
I think so. You know, I, as I said earlier, we all have so many people that commit grievous sins in our lives, unrepentant grievous sins, and some of them appear pretty responsible. They're Catholics. They know better. They're doing it anyway. They're Christians. They figure they're saved. They're doing it anyway. Can't tell you how many people I've known who've had adulterous affairs, okay? And some of them are still in the midst of it. Now, what do I do? Do I say, that's it? I have no contact with you. As far as I'm concerned, you're living a wretchedly immoral life. Forget you.
Yeah, but would you let the mistress come over for dinner with them?
No.
Okay, so then that would be the answer to my question, I think.
No. If, for a lot of reasons, all right, predominantly because of my kids, predominantly because of I don't want them to think I'm going to celebrate what you're doing, and to, just to look at it like, hey, what's good for you is good for you, and who am I to say? No, that's not where I'm at. On the other hand, it's not unusual for me to have contact with people obviously living in sin. I mean, look at how many people live together now. You know, if you're a young person, if you're 30 years old, half of your friends are living together.
I wish I was 30 years old.
Well, what are you, 23?
I'm 75.
No way.
I'm kidding.
I was
going to
say, my God, you got the youngest voice for a 75-year-old I ever heard.
I don't want to give it away because I'm really popular. People will know me calling.
All right.
But anyway, so it's up to me, basically.
In a lot of ways, it is, and you have to judge it on the conditions, on the message, on how it's interpreted. By and large, for me, I try to keep up relationships however I can, because I realize without the relationship, I have no influence on these folks. There's no way I'm going to ever, in any way, I mean, the odds are small I'm going to influence them anyway, but they're really, really small if I have no relationship with them and I just cut them out. Okay, unless they're living a certain flagrant way, and I'm not going to convey the message of, you want me to approve of this, and therefore you want me to invite you over for dinner as a sign of my approval, and that I'm not going to do. But on the other hand, you know, if, now for example, I share with you a small example. I had a friend come up to me who was having trouble with her homosexual friend. Okay, she was homosexual. Her friend was homosexual. And she was struggling in this relationship.
It was a partner.
Yeah.
You mean.
Mm-hmm. And she wanted my help in making the relationship work again. Well, I was very cautious about that. On one hand, I didn't want to say, well, that's okay, let's just get back into this. So what I focused on more was the troubling aspects of the relationship for her. I didn't specifically sit there and say, well, what do you expect? You're in a relationship that you're having trouble with, and this person is doing this and that, and you need to get back to a heterosexual existence, because she wasn't, there was no way that was going to happen. So what I did is I approached it from the perspective of, okay, this is where you are. This is why the relationship is troublesome, and this is how you got to look at yourself and how you have to look at your partner and see that, in fact, these are troublesome aspects of your relationship. Homosexually or heterosexually, these are troublesome aspects of your relationship.
Right.
Okay, dear. Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
Tough one. Age-old question. No question about that. Sherry and Dan, those are great questions, and I want to get to you. Love to. So you, if you can, you call back tomorrow or at your convenience. You tell Andrew. You'll be first up. We're going to need to fingerprint you. Okay, so just hold on. Hold on there. We have technological ways of doing this. We get a voice print. So when you call back, we can prove it is you and not a fraudulent caller. But you're first up because you waited patiently. I'm waiting for that music. It's going to start here in less than a minute, so I probably shouldn't go anywhere else other than to tell you thank you for hanging with me here on The Doctor Is In. The number you should have on your refrigerator, in case you don't, it's 1-800-KID-BRAT. No, that's the old number. That's the old number. 877-573-7825. That's the number. 1-800-PEP-TALK. Let's see, how do you kill time here? Okay, I got about 20 seconds. Four score and 7 years ago, our forefathers, and I assume it was our foremothers too, because you would want it to be that way. You wouldn't want to have these guys have a country out of wedlock. I remember my mother used to say to me, you know, the whole country was in a depression when I was a little girl. And I remember thinking, I just pictured all the whole country sitting around on the couch. And other countries telling us, you're a good country. You're a fine, you have a lot to offer. You have a nice self-image as a country. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it. Got to go. Andrew Kruchek, thanks for the screaming. Thanks to you for the company. Doctor is in. Doctor is out. Walk with God. You got kids. Hold them tight by the hand. That's the faithful thing to do, isn't it?
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
The Ave Maria CD library continues to grow. We recently recorded and did a delayed broadcast of an evangelism conference with Archbishop Charles Chaput and Sherry Wydell, hosted by Sacred Heart Major Seminary. This must-have 2-CD delayed broadcast set is $17. The Divine Mercy Center and Right to Life of Michigan jointly hosted Arrested by Mercy, Caught in the Healing Glance of Jesus. The 3-CD delayed broadcast set is $25.50. All editions of Christ in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, Christ is the Answer, Putting on the Mind of Christ, The Doctor is In, and Heart, Mind, and Strength are also available. All single talks and programs are on high-quality CDs and are $8.50 each. To place your order for one of these titles or to inquire about a talk topic of interest to you, call 734-930-4506. 734-930-4506 or write orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
The Catholic Mass is the most sacred act of worship in which a person can participate. At the Last Supper, Jesus Christ sat down with His chosen apostles and does something new, something never done before, and yet something which continues until the end of time. The Catholic Mass Revealed is a beautifully written, recorded, and filmed production. This collection will rekindle your heart, inspire your soul, and enlighten your mind. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the online store to get the Catholic Mass Revealed. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Christopher Minnick, thoughts on making every day count.